Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is Pamela Mitchell with the Reinvention Institute, and we are here this evening for the 10 Laws of Career Reinvention free teleclass series. It's August and really hot down here in Miami, and thank you all for joining me this Wednesday evening. It's the top of the hour according to my cell phone, and I'm safely ensconced in my office here at home and got my little can of soda, well, not soda, seltzer water, and door is shut. Husband is off doing and amusing himself along with our little rescue kitties who are not too thrilled to have me be in the office because one of their favorite places is to sit on my office chair. So at any rate, I'm all set and ready to begin teaching all of you this evening more about the 10 Laws of Career Reinvention and how you can put them into practice for yourself. And I'm glad that you're all here to join me. And I hope that you came with lots of questions because we will have some time at the end of tonight's call to go through questions and everything like that. It's, you know, just about a minute after, according to my phone, I see people hopping in. A lot of people come in between the 8 o'clock and 8:05 hour. So I try to get started, you know, 2 or 3 minutes after just to get people, give people time to come in because everybody has a different kind of clock. You know, sometimes their clock is a minute slow, a minute fast, or whatever. So that's why I like to use my cell phone because even my computer is a little bit off from all of that. So we're just going to give people another minute or two to start to kind of come in so that they don't have to hear or start right in the middle of everything. So, and for those of you who've just joined us, welcome. This is Pamela Mitchell with the Reinvention Institute, and you are here this evening to learn a lot about Law 6 of the 10 Laws of Career Reinvention. So very, very exciting to be here, and I was thanking everybody for their taking the time on this Wednesday night instead of watching what's on television, I don't even know, or maybe just setting up the TiVo and showing up for your reinvention. So kudos to you all, and also kudos to the people who are going to be listening to this call after the recording. And I encourage you also to take that recording and download it to whatever your MP3 player is or play it on your computer and listen to it, because many times after a call, there's all kinds of concepts that get put out, and maybe we don't catch everything right off the bat. So just take that call, that link when we send it to you, download the MP3, and give it a listen later on. Okay, so we're going to get started. It's 3 minutes after, and I would like to be prompt, and we have lots of stuff to cover tonight, and I want to have plenty of time for questions. That's my most fun part. So, as I said, I am Pamela Mitchell, founder and CEO of the Reinvention Institute, and this is our monthly free teleclass series based on the 10 Laws of Career Reinvention, Essential Survival Skills for Any Economy. That's my book, and it's been out, and thank you for reading it, if you've read it, and if you haven't, check it out. It's definitely a good thing. And what we're going to be talking about tonight is Law 6. Your reinvention board is your lifeline. So this is a great, great chapter, and I love this topic about reinvention boards because it's something that's really essential to having a successful reinvention. And, you know, many times we think about having people help us, but we don't really do it in sort of an organized fashion. And so when it comes time for this reinvention, the more structured you are about having people help you and the more thought you give to how people can help you, who can help you, all of those things, the more people can help you and the more payoff you'll get from it. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight, is strategies for your board. So we're going to go deep into that. Now, Law 6, the chapter Law 6, actually covers a number of different topics, actually. We talk about strategy planning in that topic, and that's another key piece of the reinvention process, is laying out your strategy plan. You know, when most people come into us to have help with their reinvention, they kind of have been doing one or two things, but they kind of wonder, what do I do next? And strategy planning is really the process that helps them figure out, What do you do next? What are the areas that you need to address in your reinvention in order to make sure that things run smoothly, that you're taking care of everything, and that you get the biggest payoff as possible? And I love to use the analogy for a strategy plan of kind of like a business plan or even like a life plan, really. I mean, as a matter of fact, I even like that better because, you know, really your career is meant, as you know, to deliver the life that you want. So thinking about this from sort of a life plan or a business plan, what you want to kind of look at is when you're doing a life plan or you're doing a business plan, there are certain key areas that comprise that whole plan. And when you invest energy in those areas, that's where you get a payoff. And in order for your life to be in balance, in order for your business to be in balance, you need to pay attention to those key areas. So, for example, in your life, you would look at your health, and you'd look at your relationships and your family and your friendships, and career is part of that, and your relationship with yourself. And on the business side, you'd be looking at PR or sales or marketing, operations. All of those areas are critical to having a successful life and a successful business. And the analogy that I actually draw in the book is more closely aligned with the business plan because each of those areas, like operations or PR or marketing, actually lends themselves very well to a construct to think about your reinvention. So, for example, marketing. Marketing is basically letting people know what message you have, putting it out there in the world so that you can attract the people who are interested in you to you. So that's what you do as a business. You put the message out, you know, you get your message, you market yourself, and the people who are your right customers, your right clients, they say, that's for me, and they come to you. Well, the same is true in reinvention. You want to think about marketing, and that I don't mean that. Don't get scared, you know, thinking, oh, my God, I've got to market myself. But no, what you want to think about is what's the story that you're putting out in the world, and is that story shaped to attract the kinds of opportunities that you want? So that's really what we're talking about. It's not like a big scary thing. I know there's lots of literature about, oh, my God, I've got to market myself, blah, blah, blah. But no, we're really talking about the story that you're telling. And by that, I mean in every platform, not just, you know, what do you say when people ask you, what do I do, what do you do, but also, you know, what's your story that's showing up online? Do you Google yourself? What comes up? What's the story that's being told about you by your work colleagues? All of these things are part of that, and you, the more you shape that, the more intentionally you think about adapting your story so that it's attractive to the people that you're trying to target in your new industry or your new business, the more easily those people can find you and the easier it is for you to make connections with them. So that's kind of a very short thing, although that's really not the topic for tonight. I don't know how I got off into deep on the strategy plan because really I wanted to go deep on people this evening. But just to wrap up the whole strategy plan topic for the evening, even though we're not going into this very deeply, just to let you know that I am going to be launching a strategy plan e-kit. And for those of you who've already gotten our brainstorming e-kit or maybe our Reinvention Resume Plus e-kit, you know that we've been slowly rolling out these in-depth e-kits to take you step by step through each stage of the reinvention process. So, you know, it answers that question, what do I do and how do I do it? So there's lots of in-depth information. There are lots of worksheets to take yourself through it. I like to call it sort of the DIY reinvention for those handymen out there or handy women out there. It's really to get you thinking, to get you working. And so the latest e-kit is the strategy planning e-kit because that's a key piece, and that's going to be out at the end of August. So at the end of this call, I will give you a little bit of information about that and also give you a special discount code that I'm actually going to be sending out to everybody. But you will have a special discount code to use on this that will give you a little bit more of a discount than everybody else. So, and that will be good for a couple of days. But let's move on. Oh, and one other thing I wanted to mention about this chapter is funding your reinvention before we get into people. The other topic of this chapter is funding your reinvention, and you know that's a key part of your strategy as well. And So you want to know, you want to have a plan laid out for that. And the strategy plan e-kit also will talk about how do you fund your reinvention? What are some ideas for finding different funding sources, meaning, you know, whether it be your job or creative ways to have other cash flow come in. So all of that's addressed because that's all critical. And then, of course, the third piece of all of this, of your strategy plan, which is what we're going to be diving in deeply this evening, is the people piece. So how do you have people help you? And I love the construct of having a board because it kind of makes you think about it in a more formal manner. Now, when I teach this class or when I talk about this topic in New York, you know, the Board of Advisors is a great analogy. When I deliver this in the West Coast, in California or in Los Angeles, they're like, oh, you know, does it need to really be a Board of Advisors? Can it be like a mastermind group? Whatever you want to call it, Circle of Advisors, Advisory Board, Mastermind Group, whatever it is, it's a group of people that come together to help one another and to help you accomplish your goals. That's really what we're talking about here. And so first thing is that in order to have this happen, you actually have to be willing to ask for help. And so this is something that I want to start talking about right up front because, you know, many times we think, oh, well, you know, I don't want to ask. I'm feeling a little nervous. You know, I'm not sure that I want people to know what's going on with me. And I have to tell you that right up front, you must be willing to ask. In fact, this is one of the hidden conflicts that can really stop you on this. If you're not willing to share with people or ask for advice or let them know what's going on for you, it's going to be very, very difficult for you to reinvent yourself. You need people. You need to have support. You need to have the advice. One of the things that one of my clients said to me once was her mother said that you're not going to live long enough to make all the mistakes you need to make. So you want to learn from OPM, which is not other people's money, as is in the popular vernacular, but really other people's mistakes. You don't want to have to make all the mistakes yourself. So just from a very practical perspective, you want to begin asking people for help so that you can tap into that and you can actually have your reinvention run a lot more smoothly than it would otherwise. So just make sure that you be willing to ask for help. And so we'll talk about, you know, how do you do that and what do you do. But some other stuff that I want to just say kind of as a framework for all of this is that when you're out asking people for help, I want to just say that not 100% of the people won't, 100% of the people will not help you. So you're not going to have a 10 for 10 average on this. And I just want to set this out right up front because I've had people in my seminars. I'll never forget one woman in my seminar. She said to me, you know, I know there's this woman who went to my same school, and I reached out to her as a fellow alumni, and, you know, she's doing exactly what I want to be doing, and I reached out to her and, you know, called her and tried to, you know, have her network with me, and she didn't respond. And I can't believe she didn't respond. And this person, this participant, was really very upset about the fact that this contact that she tried to reach out with to hadn't responded to her entreaties. And so what I have to say about that, she took it rather personally. She was offended. And so I'm going to say to you right up front, do not be offended if people don't help you. You never know what's going on in their lives. So you might assume, well, you know, it's something about me or they don't want to help me. Don't take it personally. It's not personal. Even if they just say, this is not what I'm doing or I don't want to do it, it's really not about you. It's about them. And as I said, you have no idea what's going on in their life. Maybe that particular woman that my student reached out to was having, you know, challenges in her life with her parents or, you know, maybe their health, or she was just completely swamped and she wanted to get back to her, but just somehow it got buried and she just didn't. So here, my student was taking things very, very personally, and she had no idea whether or not it was about her. So I tell you right up front, if people don't respond, don't take it personally. Just move on. Don't expect 100% of the people to help you, but enough people will help you so that you get to where you're going. That's all you want, is to have enough people to help you. And by the way, if you're asking and nobody's willing to help you, there is a little bit of an issue there. So you definitely want to deal with that and think about, how am I asking? And let's talk about that for a moment, actually, because that's another key piece. Like, how do you ask for help? Because it's a scary thing. And, you know, you want to maximize the chance that somebody's going to help you. But if you don't know how to do that, you can kind of cut yourself off right off the bat just by the way that you're asking. You can decrease or increase your likelihood of getting a positive response. So we want to talk about, how do you get a positive response? So let's talk about some ways. One first thing is, as I said, never take anything personally. That's the first thing. So part of that means that when you approach someone, recognize right off the bat that they're busy, they have a life, they have things other than helping you. So that's the first piece, is that you want your expectations to be in line. So you're asking for their help, you're asking them to devote some of their very precious time to helping you out. There's no obligation, so you don't want to create a feeling of obligation. So come at it with a perception of, you know, there's no obligation, I'm just here asking. The second thing that you want to be mindful of is making it very easy for them to help you. And by that I mean, many people approach people in a way that is most convenient for themselves. So maybe you're an email person, and so your best way to, so what you do is you email people, because that's your most comfortable way. Well, let me send them an email. And you get silence. And you wonder, because your friend told you to call them, but, you know, you sent them an email because, hey, that's easier for you, and that's what you did. And you didn't hear anything, and you tell your friend, oh, you know, you put me in touch with that person for help, but, you know, they didn't get back to me. Well, that's perhaps because you chose the method that was easier for you than thinking about what might be easier for the other person. So you want to approach people in a way that's easier for them. And that means that you try different methods until you find out which method they prefer. Some people prefer email. Some people prefer telephone. I know it's hard to imagine that in this day and age, especially depending upon what generation you are, that there are people who actually prefer to have a conversation and don't want to have anything other than email, like very brief, like let's schedule the conversation. But there are those people. So you got to find out, which one are they? That means when you approach someone, that whatever way you choose to initially approach them, whether you choose to approach them via telephone or you choose to approach them via email, that you say that you're going to follow up in the alternate manner. So you might leave a message and say, thanks so much. You know, here, I'm leaving this message. I'm wondering if you can help me, and I'll drop you an email as well. Or drop them an email and say, I'll give you a call in a couple of days to follow up. And so this is how you approach people in a way that maximizes your chances that you're going to hit their preferred method, and then see which one they respond to. And then you'll know, okay, this person, this is what they do. And this is assuming that you don't know the people. If you know the people, then approach them the way that you know that they like to be approached. Don't expect them to accommodate themselves to you. You accommodate yourself to them. Now, a third thing in terms of how you ask people for help is that you want to be very clear about what you're asking for. This is one of the big pitfalls that people make when they approach people, is they don't really know how they want to be helped. So when they go and ask for help, they say, well, you know, what do you think? Well, now what you've done is you've just put all the work on the other person to figure it out for you. That lowers your chances of actually having a fruitful conversation where you'll walk away with some useful tips or helpful information. So you want to be real clear about how that person can help you. And being clear means being specific. So you need to know specifically some ways, and I always say coming at it with a two or three different options for how that person can help you, because you don't know. I mean, if you know them, great. If you know this is their best way to help me, go and ask them for that specifically. But if you don't know the person, ask two or different three different things. See which one gains traction. So don't go in with a general, well, I'm not really sure. I just want to, you know, I just am looking at making this change, and I just wanted to see if you could might help me with this. No, be specific. I'm looking to meet people in this industry at this level because I'm interested in this job, particular position. Is there anybody that you know that I might network with? Or I did this type of work in my industry, and I'm wondering whether or not this exists in your industry. Could you talk to me about the different roles in that industry? Or what kind of personality types, what kind of culture is successful, or what type of personality types are successful in the industry, or whatever it is, however you want help, whether it be knowledge or contacts, or, you know, can you review these materials for me? Whatever it is, be specific. Be specific. And then the final thing is to also have consideration. I say this up front to have consideration for them, but really have consideration for their schedule. And so if you're asking for them to meet with you, or if you're asking for them to review, be mindful of what else might be on their plate. And don't have any kind of deadlines that might interfere or make it pressured for them. You know, make yourself available and say, whenever you're available for it or whenever you can get to it. And if there's a deadline on it, you know, then very nicely say, well, you know, next week I'm having this conversation. If there's a chance that we could get together before then, let me know. But if not, it's okay. So be very, very considerate and mindful of the demands on their schedule and knowing that you have to fit in with that. And one other sort of aside that I want to say in terms of how asking people to help you and how they might help you, because this is a little bit of a touchy subject, and I know that this happens actually quite frequently to me and to other people who have an expertise in something. Many times people will come and ask for assistance in an area that is actually a person's job. So you might go to somebody, you might say, oh, you know, I have a really great friend who's a resume writer, and let me go ask her for advice on my resume. Be really careful about that, because unless that person is one of your dearest, dearest friends, and even if they are one of your dearest, dearest friends, I really believe firmly that you want to respect the fact that this is a person's livelihood, and not go to people and ask them to give to you for free, or expect them to give to you for free what they are paid to do in their real world. So if there's somebody that you know that you're really interested in having help you that way, go and have a conversation with them. Say, you know, I'd love to, you know, I'm looking to do this. I'd love to be able to tap into your expertise. You know, I know that you get paid to do this. Is there any way that we might be able to work together and offer to pay and see what they say to you? You know, they may say, oh, no, don't worry about it, or, you know, maybe there's a way that we can work out something, you know, that's a trade or whatever it is. But respect the fact that this is their livelihood, that they earn money from doing this. Don't ask for them to basically do a freebie for you and not take consideration for that. That actually can be considered very rude. Whether or not they actually take you up on your offer of payment, it's rude not to offer payment. And I think that's just, you know, my own personal thing on that. It's for even the closest of people. Unless, you know, in the best of all worlds, they're an expert in something else that they get paid for that you happen to need. So therefore, you can trade and offer to barter. Well, hey, you know, I have this expertise in graphic design. You have this expertise in IT. Maybe we can do a trade and, you know, we can help each other. So that might be a great way of doing it as well. But recognize the value that's assigned to that help that you're asking for, that assistance that you're asking for. Okay, now, another topic that we're going to talk about in terms of asking people to help you, and kind of this deals with selection process, because I know I get emails about this all the time. How do I choose people for my board, or how do I choose people to help me in my reinvention mastermind circle? And so there's some key questions that you need to ask yourself. You want to listen and ask yourself these things to determine whether or not this is a person that might be a good candidate for your reinvention board. And the first question that you want to ask yourself is, has this person accomplished what I want to accomplish? That's like right off the bat. But here's the thing. It's always great if a person has specifically accomplished what you want to accomplish, meaning that you know, you're targeting a particular industry, they've climbed the ladder in that industry. That's great. But it doesn't have to be that. It can also be that they've risen to a level in their field of expertise and you're looking to move and rise as well, or you know, somehow the general accomplishment that they've done mirrors what you want to do. So if like why people come to me, okay, I've switched careers. I now help other people switch careers, but I did it myself first. And then people would come to me for advice. Now, maybe they didn't want to switch. They didn't want to make the switch that I did. They didn't want to go from Wall Street to entertainment, but they wanted to make a switch. And so they knew that the general principles were the same, whether or not the actual topic was the same. So that's the same kind of thing you want to think about. Has this person accomplished what I'm looking to accomplish? Have they made a switch in their career and did one thing and then moved to something successful? Or have they been successful in the industry that I'm looking to target? So come at it from different angles because you'll get different perspectives that way. One other little aside that I want to say about this thing about whether or not somebody's accomplished what you want to accomplish and asking for advice on that. One of the things that I teach, and actually will it be? Yes, it'll be next month where we talk about natives and who's in the industry that you're looking to target and how you always want to talk to a native of the industry. And you know, we'll touch on that a little bit tonight, but that's a really critical piece. When you're looking for people who have accomplished what you want to accomplish and you're looking for natives, one caveat is that if you're looking for that person to speak to you about that particular industry, make sure that their experience is recent. Because one of the definitions of a native is that they're deep into the industry. Maybe this person did the industry, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and now they're on to something else. They're no longer really a native. Once somebody has been out of an industry for a couple of years, they can't really speak to it with an insider's perspective, especially in this day and age, because things change so very quickly in industries that, you know, what might have been good, you know, just a year or two ago is now, you know, completely shifted because business models have shifted or whatever it is. So this is something that I know because I have people approach me many, many times for, you know, you worked in entertainment, I want to talk to you about entertainment. Well, I've been out of entertainment 7 years. Anything that I might have to say is really no longer meaningful as far as I'm concerned. That's, you know, I'm no longer a native. So those people, when they approach me for help because they want to talk about the entertainment field, I'm much less likely to help them because that's not something that is recent experience for me. So when you are going to ask for help, make sure that you ask for people who are recently or currently in that field that you want. Don't ask for something that's, you know, many years ago and that person has moved on and they're like, you know, that's the last thing I want to be talking about, or, you know, just their experience is really not relevant so much anymore. Okay, question number two. Do they have my best interests at heart? Very important question to ask yourself. Many times people have their own agendas, and we're going to talk about that in a little while as well. But and when that happens, the information that you get might be a little bit colored. And this is not a good thing to do because they may steer you down the wrong path, whether deliberately or not deliberately, just from their own perspective. So you've got to ask that question whether or not that person has your best interest at heart. And you may already be in front of the person. I mean, if you can tell right off the bat whether or not they would have your best interest at heart, great. But if not, then you may already be in front of them having a conversation and need to evaluate, where is this person coming from? You know, do they really want me to succeed? I'll give you a quick example of this from the book. I had a friend come to me who was interested in buying a franchise in her city, and and there were two franchises available in the city, and one was already purchased, and she was looking at purchasing the second one. And so she decided that she was going to go for advice for to the other franchisee in the, her town. Now, made a lot of sense on its surface because, of course, you know, he knew the business in town, so he could give her sort of the insider's view and the native's view on what it was like to run that kind of business in her town. But when she called me and said this is what she was going to do, I told her, please don't do that. You know, that don't go to him first. And, you know, my feeling on it was that he was not going to have her best interest at heart just because of the nature of the situation. She was looking to purchase the second franchise in town. At the moment, that franchise was open and available. That meant nobody was doing that business. That meant that he was getting that overflow business from her section of town without having to pay for it. So it was in his best interest to discourage anybody who would buy that because that source of free business for him was going to go away. So I said to her, don't go to him first, go to him last. Talk to people who are outside your region, outside your city. Get their take on the business first. Talk to at least two or three of those people, and then go to the guy in your town. In fact, that's what she did, and she said that if she had gone to him first, she never would have bought the business because he painted such a negative picture of the business. But she'd already talked to three people outside the region, so she knew it was a good business, so she could tell that he did not have her best interests at heart. He was interested in protecting his business. Well, you know, nothing personal. Like I said, none of this is personal. So if you're like thinking, that's so terrible. Well, look, you know, he's coming at it from his perspective. Don't take it personally. Just understand that that's what's going to be happening so that you can adapt accordingly. The fun thing about the end of this story is that she did buy that franchise, did build it into a very successful business, and eventually bought the guy out. So I love the end of that story. So anyway, that's what you do. You want to check and make sure the person has your best interest at heart. Third thing is, do they need to be right? Another key question to ask, because sometimes people need to be right. So they're going to tell you, this is how it has to be, and if you don't do it this way, you're going to fall apart. Don't want people who are so invested in being right that they're going to dissuade you from alternative paths or shoot down anything that they say. Really what it is they're speaking from their experience, and you want somebody who is very clear that they're speaking from their experience and this is what they've experienced and this is their analysis on it, but that you can do what you want. So you don't want them to be so insistent on being right that they're going to tell you that that's the only way or you will absolutely fail. You want to know, you know, that they're just coming at it from a perspective of, hey, this is my wisdom, but, you know, you may have a different experience. And then the fourth and final question that you want to ask is, how is their situation different from mine? And this just means that you want to understand what kind of hurdles they've had to face and what those are and how it might be different from yours, what different things they brought to the table. And this is something that, this is kind of a touchy question. In fact, I even debated whether or not I was going to include this question because it's, I think people can take this to say, well, you know, they had this and I didn't have this. Like, they had savings and I have to work. I don't have as much savings as they have. And people can turn this question into an excuse for why it was easier for that particular person than it would be for them. And so I'm here to tell you, don't do that. Do not turn this into an excuse for that. It just means, how is it different than what you've got? Because everybody has things that are stronger than you, and then they are starting things from a deficit from you. So when you ask this question, be mindful of the balance. Because, yeah, maybe they had more savings, but maybe they had less education. Or maybe they were starting from a lower position or whatever it is. So know that, you know, you want to understand where they've come from. That's why you're asking how their situation is different from yours. But don't use it as an excuse to say, well, it was easier for them. Because, frankly, once you dig below the surface, chances are you're going to find out it wasn't easier for them. In fact, it might have been harder for them, and you can take inspiration from that. All right, let's dive into advisory board. oh my God, time just goes so quickly and I want to give so much information. All right, the advisory board. What is the purpose of this advisory board, this mastermind group, this reinvention board? It is really your circle of support, and it's there to help you brainstorm and to facilitate your development as you move towards your reinvention, and also to connect you with key people and to act as an impartial sounding board. That is very critical, this impartiality, and that will come up in a little while as well. Key thing, you don't go to your board to tell you what to do. Write that down. I don't ask my board what to do. So you ask them to weigh in, you lay out the situation, but you don't say, what should I do? Because that's not a question that they're going to answer. So you ask them, here are the things that are going on. You know, in your analysis, what kinds of things do you think I should be thinking about? But don't say, what should I do? Because a good board member isn't going to answer that question. It's up to you what you do. You make the decisions, but they act as a sounding board to help you go through all of this. So you can say, what do you think the pros and cons are? Help me look at this from a different perspective. You know, I'm trying to look at the benefits. And they can remind you of certain things, but don't let anybody tell you what you should do. And if somebody tells you what you should do, then you really need to rethink whether or not they need to be a part of your advisory board. All right, other couple of things about advisory boards. They can be virtual, all right? Just because we call it a board doesn't mean that they all need to be present and that you need to get them all together. They don't even have to know each other. Really, this is sort of a construct for you to use in terms of managing how people help you, but it doesn't mean that they actually have to be assembled as a board. Although if you want to, that's great. And I gave an example in the book about Dina, who gave a circle of advisors. She got together a group of friends, and they all acted as advisors to one another. So if you want to do that and make it social, that's fabulous. But it doesn't have to be that way. Now, another thing around this board is that they must be experienced and successful, and ideally that they've gone through some hard knocks and rebuilt. Because really, what you want out of your board is wisdom. You want wisdom. Back to OPM, other people's mistakes. You want somebody who has accomplished what you're looking to accomplish, that they are experienced, they're successful, you know, but they've gone through some hard knocks so that they can talk to you about those hard knocks. Because you're going to face some, too, on your path. Nobody goes along a reinvention without having a couple of bumps in the road. And you want to talk to those people that have hit similar bumps so that you don't have to make the same mistakes or have it take as long to get over that bump as it might have taken someone else or you if you didn't know what to do around it. Now, another critical quality, matter of fact, one of the most important qualities, is that they must be willing to be honest with you. Don't want somebody on your board that's not going to tell you the straight truth. This is so critical because so many times people want to protect our feelings, but in protecting our feelings, they actually hamper our progress. So it's essential that whoever is on your board, however they're helping you, and we're going to talk in a minute about the types of people that you want on your board, that they're willing to be honest with you. And they're going to tell you, you know what, the path you're going down, odds of having that work, slim, you know, very slim, and that they'll just tell it to you straight. They're not going to just kind of sugarcoat it and, you know, let you kind of go along and figure it out yourself. They're just going to tell you, you know what, that business model, hard to make it work. You know, here's the business model I think you should do. Or, you know, that pathway, trying to approach people, that's not going to work. I think you should do it this way, you know, but you do what you want, but here's my experience. I've done it this way, and here's what I found to be successful. So that's what you want. You want somebody who's going to be brutally honest with you, tell you the truth, even when it's hard for you to hear, and there will be those moments where you're like, oh, my God, I don't want to hear this. Well, listen, because it's that kind of truth that really gets you over those humps quickly. It's what makes you avoid making those mistakes. Let's talk about profiles. Who's on this board? Okay, master connector, and this is straight out of the book. Who are these people? Master connector you want on your board, the people that have the golden Rolodex, the people who can put you in contact with others. This is a critical function because part of having a successful reinvention is expanding your network. Second one is the clued-in colleague. And this person is one who knows you in a work environment, who can talk to you about, you know, your skills and talents in work. And this person's critical because as you're evaluating opportunities for your reinvention, you want somebody who knows you in a work environment and who can guide you about whether or not something might be a good fit. And I love to give the example of somebody who once worked for me when I ran business development and sales in one of my companies. And then this person was a great administrative person. They were not, they didn't really have strong sales skills, to be perfectly honest. I did most of the sales, and then once it was sold, I would hand it off to this person, and this person would just, you know, handle all the administrative kind of back and forth conversational stuff and handle the agreements that I would give and all that. But they never really negotiated stuff directly. Afterwards, they went off to a different company, and I got a call from them networking, you know, about a year and a half after we both left our firm. And she said to me, well, you know, I'm looking at sales jobs, and I want to be in sales. And, you know, back to being honest with people, back to people who know you in a work environment. And I said, well, you know, why are you looking at being in sales? Because I knew this was not really her thing. And she said, well, I'm looking for it to be safe. You know, sales is a safe space because it's a revenue-generating department. And so my comment was, you know, sales is only safe if you're good at it. And that's not your natural talent. And so that's the level of honesty that you want. You want somebody who is clued in to your skills and talents that could say, you know, really, here's where you'd be great. You'd be great in sort of a marketing role. You'd be great, you know, in sort of a partner management role. But, you know, I don't think you want to be in the sales role because, you know, X, Y, and Z. Here are the examples from our own experience that shows that it'd be difficult for you to succeed in a sales role. That's the kind of clued-in colleague that you want so that when you're looking at that sales job that sounds good, they can say to you, you know what, sales isn't for you. Really look at marketing or partner support. Okay, third kind of person you want on your board, warm and fuzzy. You want those people who are going to support you because, again, there are lots of bumps in the road. Sometimes it's hard to keep the faith, and you're kind of making the progress, but, you know, you've been, you know, in the marathon and it's 17th mile, and you need somebody there just cheering you on. That's what the warm and fuzzies do. When it's a tough day, when, you know, somebody hasn't called you back or an interview didn't go the way you wanted, you reach out to them, and they build up your spirit. An essential person to have on the board. And then the opposite of that is the drill sergeant. That's the person who gives you the kick in the pants when you need it. And maybe you're whining about, oh, I don't have this. And they're like, get over it already or, you know, get it done. They hold you accountable. So maybe they say to you, you know, you've been talking about getting your resume rewritten for the past 3 weeks and I've seen nothing. You know, when are you going to get it done already? So you want that drill sergeant, the one who's going to hold you accountable and, again, be honest and straight and say, you know what? Get it done, because you need that person to move forward, to make progress. And then the last person that you want on the board is the native, and that's the one that has the inside scoop. They're in the trenches. They're in the inner circle, and they know what the culture's like that there. They know the language. They know they can help you translate yourself. They can give you that sort of ethnographic information so that when you make that switch, you're kind of coming at it with the information you need so that you are not standing out, that you know how to approach the different tribe, so to speak, and fit in. So you need a native as well. All right, talking about these qualities, they can overlap. So you can have people that provide a couple of different functions for you. So maybe somebody who's a native is also a master connector, or your warm and fuzzy and drill sergeant person can actually be the same people. That's, you know, kind of surprising, but there are those friends that, you know, can support you when you need it, but also kick you in the pants when you need it as well. And also, you can actually hire out some of these functions. A coach is a great example, or even a therapist. They can be your warm and fuzzy and drill sergeant, and that's really convenient for keeping yourself accountable. And the last thing that you want to know about these sort of profiles of people, so to speak, is that you want to ask people to give in a way that is natural for them. This is, again, another one of the pitfalls that people tend to make, is that they go to people that they think, you know, are most likely to help them, and then they ask them for everything, or they ask them for the wrong thing. And then it makes that person uncomfortable, and then you just lowered your odds of having somebody help you. So, you know, maybe your master connector just does not have patience for you, you know, patience to listen to people who, you know, are having a hard day. Don't ask them, don't call them when you're feeling down and expect them to support you. You know, they might be 2 minutes on the phone. Who should you speak to? Okay, great, bye. So go to people and ask them to help you in a way that's natural for them. What you want is for them to say, oh, that's easy. Of course I can help you. So some people, it's, oh, that's easy for me to help you listen and make you feel better, or it's easy for me to be a drill sergeant, or it's easy for me to put you in touch. Whatever is easiest for them, that's the way you ask them for help. Don't ask them for help in a way that's not natural. All right, I promised that I would say who not to have on the board. Ooh, this is just as important of a topic. And this, you know, always causes a lot of controversy, this first category of who not to have on your board. First, people you don't want to have in your mastermind or on your board is your spouse or partner. Now, in every talk that I give, somebody objects to this. They say, oh, you know, my spouse, my partner, you know, they're so supportive of me. You know, they really have been one of my biggest cheerleaders in all of this. That's fabulous. Great. Keep them as your cheerleader, as your supporter. But don't ask them to be a formal part of your board. And the reason for that is that you want people on your board that have no personal investment in any particular outcome. Remember I said that one of the functions of a board is to be an impartial sounding board? Impartial being the operative phrase. You need somebody, all people on your board need to be impartial. They need to not be invested. And your spouse or partner is naturally invested by the very fact of their relationship with you. They have an investment in a particular outcome. Now, you know, they might be the most objective people in the world, but personally, it's unfair. I believe it's unfair to ask them to put aside their own personal interests, because you, as you reinvent yourself, need to take their interests into account because you're in relationship with them. So their interests, their needs in all of this must be taken into account in your reinvention plan. So there's a natural conflict, because anybody on your board has to take themselves and their needs out of it and give you impartial advice, but your spouse's needs need to be taken into account. So that's why they can't be a part of your reinvention board. Your board must be impartial. Sort of a corollary to that is that you don't want your parents on your board. And again, they can be very supportive. And by the way, when I say they're not on your board, it's not that you don't turn to them for advice and support. It's just that they're not on your board. They're not the formal people that help you. They're kind of informal people. And you understand their limitations. Remember I said you want to check to see who's giving you assistance or help and where they're coming from? These people that I'm mentioning in terms of who not to have on your board have inherent limitations by nature of their own personality or their relationship with you. So you've got to take those limitations into account when you're evaluating what they're telling you. And your parents are a great example of this, because, you know, you don't want anybody on your board who remembers every mistake that you've ever made in your life and feels no compunction about bringing it up, you know, whenever they think. So this is something that's really critical, because when you're saying, you know, I said I wanted to move to Florida, you know, and my mother immediately starts to freak out because, you know, she remembers the times that, you know, when I was in college and I went overseas and I ran out of money and she had to bail me out. And now she's got, like, all these images in her mind that if I leave my job and move to Florida and start a company that she's going to have to bail me out. That's what parents do. And my mother's a very supportive woman. In fact, she's the topic of Law 6. She's very supportive. But, you know, your parents, when you say you're going to make a change, it triggers their fears and concerns for your safety. And that's natural, because they're your parents. They brought you into the world. They want you to be safe. So they're going to come at it from that perspective, and that may be their first default. Now, again, my mother, once she got over that, she's been my biggest supporter and biggest advisor, but her first thing, oh, my God. So you don't want them on your board, because you don't want any of that leaking into your board. You know, you want to deal with that and then, you know, work it through with them and then move on. All right, another not to have on the board, frenemies. These are those competitive types. They're your friends, but, you know, they're really competitive with you, and you got to sniff them out, because, you know, they can be kind of insidious. They're the ones that, oh, I love you, you're so great. But here's the thing. Here's how you sniff them out. When you tell them your ideas, somehow you just feel bad afterwards, or you feel like they're just not likely to happen, or, you know, you were feeling so excited, and then you tell this friend something, and somehow it just doesn't seem like such a good idea, and this happens every single time. So you want to, when you start to talk to people, and you talk to a friend, and you think, and these people, by the way, can be highly placed, and you can think they would be great for you. And I'm telling you, my clients, they've had people like this where, you know, they're just in the perfect position. You think this is the perfect person to help me, and then you realize that really, you know, whether it be from their own insecurities, their own incompetitive nature, they're not interested in helping you, even though on the surface they're your quote-unquote friend. Watch out for these people. Another corollary for this is unhappy people. You don't want people who are frustrated, burned out, or in a downward spiral. Their energy is negative. You don't want anybody who has negative energy or who feels like, you know, life is just too hard and things aren't going to be successful. It's interesting. One of the studies that I quoted in the book shows that happiness is transmitted through social connections. So a happy friend who lives in a one-mile radius gives a 25% boost in your happiness. So you want to surround yourself with happy people because that's going to boost your happiness. You want to surround yourself with positive people because it's going to boost your positivity. And you want to surround yourself with successful people because that will boost your likelihood of success. So surround yourself with those kinds of people, not unhappy people. All right, a couple of final points, and then I'm going to open up the line for questions. You want to make sure that when you manage your board that you remember that this is from the circle of giving, and it's about giving back. And you want to think about giving back to your board members and to others. So one thing, put your thinking cap on. One of my pet peeves is that a lot of times I'll get networking requests. People will say, oh, you know, can you help me with this? And, oh, by the way, if there's any way that I can help you, just let me know. Well, now what if they just done? They put all the work in my lap to figure out how they might be helpful to me. Now I'm much less likely to want to help them. Versus there are those people who say, you know, I'm interested in networking with you. I'd love to talk to you. And by the way, I have this skill, so if you need, you know, any kind of, you need me to take a look at your social media and give you a couple of tips. This was somebody that just reached out to me to network just a couple of days ago. You know, I'm a social media expert, so if you check, I can check you out your social media and give you a couple of tips, and I'd love to be able to speak with you. Guess what? You know, she got help. So when you are approaching your board, and this is just even a general networking tool, which we'll talk about, you know, in, I guess, 2 months, we'll talk about networking, you want to think about and you figure out how you can help and then offer specific assistance. So do that for your board members. Help them, but also help other people. Be generous with your contacts, your experience, and advice, because you need others to be generous in that way. And I believe in paying it forward. That circle of giving, when you want people to give to you, where your stuff comes, people helping you, you don't really know. Oftentimes it's the ones that seem the least likely. The ones that seem the most likely somehow never pan out. So you want to be that least likely person for someone else. Be what you want to have happen to you. Be that generous person who just helps for the sake of being able to share their expertise, their knowledge, and their gift, knowing that when everybody's in their right place career-wise, that it works for everyone. All right, I am now going to open the floor to questions. And so what I would say is that if you have a question, just press 1 on your keypad. Press 1 on your keypad if you have a question. And then basically I will open the line and ask you to just give us your question. So press the number 1 on your keypad if you have a question about the Reinvention Board, how you manage it, how you get people to help you, you know, how to manage it, whatever. Press 1 on your keypad, the number 1 on your keypad. And do that. Or I think also there might be, you might actually also be able to type questions. I think that I enabled the participant dashboard. So you should be able to do that as well. So look to see if you're able to type into that. I have it enabled on my side. And so be able to do that. So go ahead and press 1 on your keypad now if you have a question, or type something in your dashboard if you have a question. All right, let's see a question from Jane. Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Good. Thank you for answering my question request here. My question is, I hope not so unique that it's specialized, but I think it might be somewhat universal. When you're moving into a new area like this, it seems to me that it's the most difficult person to find for your board is someone who is wildly successful in the new industry, because most of your contacts probably wouldn't be within that industry. Yep. And for me in particular, I've been homeschooling my children for 12 years. So I'm so far removed from any industry that I'm wondering how you go about identifying a person.
Oh, that's a great question. I like that. Because yes, you know, you want, the goal is to target somebody who's successful. Really what we're talking about is a successful native.
Correct.
In that industry, and how you're going to do that. We will get into like natives a little bit more deeply next month, but I want to answer your question. So here's the thing. Sometimes you can go directly to a native, and the way you can do that is by writing them what I like to call a fan letter. If they're very highly placed and you read something that they've done or you attended a class of theirs or whatever, write them a note. Read a book, write them a note. Say, you know, I read your book, or I saw, you know, this article or this talk that you did, and it was great. And be specific. You know, I liked these philosophies, and I really think that this is very important, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm really interested in this industry. I'm wondering if you would take the time to maybe have a quick 10 or 15-minute conversation with me. So, you know, I had one client that was a master at this. She actually just would write cold to people in that she was targeting the food industry, and she would write to them, and they would actually speak to her because she wrote a great letter that showed that she really had done some in-depth research and had really thought about it, and that she was thoughtful. That's one way to approach them. Another way is that to use that 6 degrees of separation, which thankfully is a lot easier these days with LinkedIn. So you can go in and find out who you know that knows people. That maybe somebody you know might know somebody in the industry. They might not know that person, but they might know somebody in that industry. And then what you do is you just kind of daisy chain it. So you go, you meet that person, you say, are there other people that you suggest I speak to? You get names from them, and you daisy chain into as close as possible to the person you might be trying to reach, so that eventually you can maybe get somebody that knows them who can say, I spoke to her, take a moment and speak to Jane, because I think she'd be a good person for you to have a quick chat with. Does that help?
It does help, and I think I have one more piggyback question off of that.
Okay.
When you are actually assuming that you're successful and are able to meet with this person, what is a good way to close them, obviously to thank them? Is it appropriate, if it seems like they're amenable to helping you, to ask for a follow-on, like, I'm taking away these action items, and I'll look into this, this, and this. Could I possibly run past you any ideas I get from further on, or is that presumptuous?
Well, you can say, would it be okay for me to reach out to you again if I need additional advice?
Okay.
And just keep it very simple. Like, try not to make it sound like any work.
Right, or like you're committing them. So if it's okay to contact you and just leave it general without a specific contact time.
Well, just not even, can I contact, is it okay if I reach out to you again for advice? So
okay.
Rather than, can I run stuff by you, which makes it sound like a little bit of work?
Yeah.
I'm going to send them something to review. Just say, is it okay if I reach out to you again for advice, you know, as I'm going along this process? And, you know, they'll let you know, sure, you know, not a problem or whatever. And then here's the thing, because this is where most people fall down. Follow up, you know, first of all, obviously with a thank you note, which, you know, people do. But then keep them posted on your progress. Drop them occasional notes letting them know how you are, you know, and letting them know how their advice has helped you. Just wanted to drop you a quick note, let you know that I spoke to so-and-so in this, and you were so on point with this, this, and this. Thank you. So before you have to ask them again, show them that you're using their advice and how it's really paying off. Make them feel good.
Okay, great. I actually did do that within, and it was very successful. At first, it was not successful because I didn't realize it. I didn't get a response for several months, and I found out later that this person had gone out of the country.
Right.
So when they finally emailed me back, I was pleasantly surprised that they really still did care, and then I went, you know what I mean? I didn't want to keep pursuing it if I wasn't hearing back. So that did work well for me, so thank you.
Yeah, and one other tip that I want to give you, Jane, and then I will take another question, but I want to, another tip that I want to give you, because somebody did this for me, and I loved it, okay? A lot of times, especially this day and age, people get asked for assistance virtually. Like, you're not oftentimes, you're going to be talking to them over the phone. You may not actually have ever met the person.
Right.
And so what people have done for me, and this one I just thought was so inspired, after I did like sort of just a phone conversation to help somebody, they sent me a thank you note with a Starbucks gift card. And it said, thank you so much for your help. Have your next cup of coffee on me. It was inspired because, of course, what do you normally do to ask for advice? You take people for coffee.
Right.
So, you know, since we weren't, you know, we couldn't do this in person, since I couldn't take you for a cup of coffee in person, have your next cup of coffee on me. It was a $5 gift card, but let me tell you, when she wants advice again, I'll pick up the phone. So, you know, do these very simple things that are very memorable because most people don't do them. So when you do, it really helps you stand out. And there's another person who sent me, like, just these little travel candles. But, you know, I travel a lot, so it was just very sweet and very thoughtful, you know, very small, nothing, it doesn't have to be a big whatever. But, you know, just enough to say, I thought about you, I appreciate the time that you took, you know, and, you know, here's just a little something.
And wonderful.
Yeah, so that's my other tip. But I like the coffee thing even better because it plays off of what would normally be happening if you were meeting in person, and I just thought it was so witty that I was like, oh, and I actually have used it. And I tell you, when I use it, people are like my big fans. I use it when people help me, you know, thanks so much for your help. You know, have your next cup of coffee on me. And these people are, and turn out to be huge supporters. So very effective.
Great. Thank you for your help.
Okay. Thanks so much, Jane.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Okay. We have time for one more question. If you have a question, hit 1 on your keypad. Hit 1 on your keypad if you have another question. Just we have time for one more question. So everybody is a little shy. Come on. Ask a question because, hey, you know, here's the thing. You get a chance to have a question answered for free about your reinvention. I mean, you know, part of reinvention is taking opportunities when they are presented to you. So this is an opportunity to have a question answered. So press 1 on your keypad. If you have a question that you want to have answered, press 1 on your keypad, just the number 1 on your keypad. Let me check my participant dashboard just to make sure. Nope, haven't gotten anybody asking questions through the dashboard. So, all right, I'm gonna auction it off. Going once, 1 on your keypad, going twice, whether or not you want to have a question. All right, I'm guessing not, since I don't see any ones on the keypad being pushed. Okay, thank you so much for an awesome call this evening, and this has just been a fabulous, fabulous event, and please join us next month. Oh, and I promise to give you the discount code for the strategy kit if you are interested in getting, learning more about and working through how to lay out a reinvention strategy, laying it out so that you can launch your reinvention effectively. Use the code SAVE25. SAVE25. Go to our website, reinvention-institute.com. Go to the self-help tools, and it's pre-order now. Enter SAVE25. You'll get 25% off of the $79 price, so big savings, and that'll be good through Sunday. All right. Have a great evening, everybody, and I will see you next month. Bye-bye.